read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Late last month, the North Carolina Supreme Court took the extraordinary and what many see as the deeply worrisome step of revisiting the landmark Leandro school funding case, a case that has long guaranteed all the state's school children a constitutional right to a sound basic education. At issue is whether state lawmakers can be ordered to appropriate funds necessary to make the constitutional guarantee a reality throughout the state. And as I learned in a conversation I had recently with attorney Matt Ellenwood, the director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project, the arguments before the court provided great cause for concern. As Ellenwood also noted, however, regardless of the outcome in the case, advocates have no intention of giving up on their efforts to secure adequate funding for public schools.
Well, Matt Ellenwood, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be with you, Rob.
So it appears that we've reached what one might say is a seminal moment in the history of public education in our state, with the state Supreme Court's latest reconsideration of its previous holdings in the landmark Leandro school funding case. It seems we know that the state school children have a constitutional right to a sound basic education, but despite that guarantee, state leaders have never really made it available to all kids, and that in 2022, the court said they had to. But now, am I right? That's all up in the air again?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to predict all of this because it is all pretty unusual to be here rehearing a case that's from November 2022 about education, where the court ordered the implementation of the comprehensive remedial plan developed in the Leandro case. It's really the only plan we've ever come up with as a state for how we're going to meet kids' constitutional rights to educational opportunities. There have been some progress over the 30 years this has been going on, you know, things like the adoption of early childhood programs, more for, which is now NC Pre-K. There was a thing that was developed called the Disadvantaged Student Supplemental Fund that does a better job of driving resources to districts that lack local tax bases to fund their schools. But it is really unusual to be back reconsidering that so soon when nothing has changed in the case factually or procedurally, other than the needs of children have only grown over that time because we haven't been meeting them, particularly around things like mental health. And we see that there's been recovery from the pandemic learning losses, but we're still not even back to where we were before. So it really is unusual to be reconsidering this particular case. And, you know, there's a constitutional scholar's brief that was submitted with faculty members from law schools across the state talking about the importance of respecting precedent, stare decisis, and having some sort of finality to these decisions so that it doesn't feel like people's constitutional rights hang by a thread and can shift so easily just based on an election. And to have that all be happening just for the purpose of denying what is actually a pretty minimal level of resources to our schools at a time when we know how great those needs are. We're all dealing with teacher vacancies, bus driver shortages. So it is an unusual issue to be bending over backwards and sort of going against what the normal course of how things are done legally, you know, just to deny those minimal resources at a time when we are leaving much more money unspent than what is required to actually fund this plan.
So how do we get to this point? Is the leadership of the General Assembly, Republican leaders have basically said, the court may have ordered us to spend the money, but they just can't make us. That's unconstitutional to tell the legislature to spend money and therefore hard cheese. I don't know. Is that basically what it is? And that's why they've brought this back to the court?
It's sort of unusual the way it even made its way back because it didn't come back on that particular issue. It was they were doing a calculation to determine how much money was still needed to fund years 2 and 3 of the plan because there was a short session budget that passed in the intermediate time. And so they were appealing that dollar amount calculation of $678 million. And somehow we ended up, now we're saying that we can raise subject matter jurisdiction at any time. And so it would limit the remedy in the case to, it's unclear if it's just Hoke County, or sometimes they've said Hoke and Halifax, or just the 5 low wealth districts that brought the case. None of that's even really clear from the arguments or the briefings. And it's kind of bizarre because it was the Supreme Court itself that remanded this case to that trial court to do the calculation that it did. So it's hard to imagine how it couldn't have subject matter jurisdiction when it was, you know, granted it by the same court that's now saying they don't have it. So that would have really serious consequences. We know that this case is about at-risk students, the students from working class families who are living in poverty, multilingual learners, students with learning differences have been defined at risk over time in the case. And we know that there are students who fall into those descriptions in all of our 115 school districts. So there were some questions raised at the trial. Is it really fair to have you know, we're going to go ahead and make sure that a couple of these counties have licensed teachers and high quality principals and some of the other resources needed to fund our educational plan and meet standards. But then if you're in a different district, then you won't get those resources. So it's not something I've ever seen before.
We're talking with Matt Ellenwood, who's the director of the Education and Law Project at the North Carolina Justice Center. We're talking about the Leandro case, this 30-year-old lawsuit that seemed to confer on all North Carolina children the right to a sound basic education, but has been poorly enforced over the decades and now is really in jeopardy. So what happened in the court? We had a hearing in the state Supreme Court. We're recording this the week afterwards. What happened? What was your take on what the lawyer said, what the justices' questions maybe they asked?
I mean, it's all very unclear, but what's clear to me is that even after 30 years, and I think that was a theme of the 2022 decision by the Supreme Court, was that we really didn't want to take this step of forcing the legislature to fund the amount of resources needed to provide a sound basic education, but they were given deference for 30 years, and it got to the point really where enough is enough. We have to do something because our educational rights in our Constitution are actually very strong, even compared to other states where it's a fundamental right. We have a really strong language, and it says that that our legislature will, you know, maintain a general and uniform public education system wherein equal educational opportunities will be provided for all children. And I don't think anyone thinks that we've met that last standard. But what came out of the case was really that there's going to be more delays. You know, that the pattern of delay that we've seen in this case for so long is going to continue. We're because by saying that the court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction, that we have to come back and see if there's been a constitutional violation in these districts again. And they've really kind of invited like 115 separate cases because there are low-wealth districts that are taxing themselves at the maximum level that's allowed by state law, and they still don't have enough resources to meet the constitutional standard. So that's on the state. And it's really unfortunate that we're going to have to see more delays. We saw there were, you know, when we got this decision in 2022, there were people who work in some of these low-wealth districts, not just the ones in the case, but places like Northampton, Scotland. And there was just tears of joy that we were going to get these resources. I think our schools have done amazing things of kind of providing, getting about average compared to other states outcomes for students, even with really minimal resources. And so I think people were excited to see what they could do when we were getting more of that minimal standard of what you need to be able to provide kids with more options, more opportunities. And then we had people who were just devastated when the news came that this was going to be reheard because the writing's on the wall that's, you know, nothing good was going to come from this rehearing. So just from the perspective of people who are working in these schools or working with these families, this really has been a roller coaster. And I think shows the problem with having these kind of shifting decisions and rehearings of the same cases where people never really know where their rights stand. And they think they're being affirmed one day, and then less than a year later, they find out that they're not going to be, potentially.
One fact you alluded to briefly, I think it's worth reiterating, is the fact that this comprehensive plan that advocates would like to see implemented, which basically calls for spending a significant amount of money to upgrade our schools, that money is in the bank, right? It's not like the legislature would have to raise taxes or take any extraordinary action to appropriate those funds. The money's there, right?
Right. And I think that's why we got that decision in 2022 is because, you know, once they've passed a budget and allocated money to different places, it's pretty hard to go back and say you have to take it away from those areas and put it towards education. But it was easier to do in the unusual circumstance where you have so much money that's left unspent. So we weren't using it for anything else. So I think that was an important fact in how we got to the original decision. You know, if we were to implement this entire plan, I think my colleague Chris Nordstrom's done a good job of putting this in context because this is a system that serves 1.5 million kids. It's all jobs. It's teachers, counselors, therapists, nurses, and all of these things cost money. But if we were to implement the entire plan over 8 years, about over $5 billion, that would only bring us from 49th in school funding effort, the amount of our GDP that we spend on education, to 44th. So we'd still be way below average from amongst the states because this is really just about meeting a minimal standard. It's not supposed to be an aspirational plan. It's about the bare minimum.
Obviously, the advocates with whom you work are not just sitting idly by. You all are speaking out. There are activities. There are ways to become involved. There are groups that are taking action with respect to Leandro and just school funding in general. I presume more people could become involved.
I think so. Yeah, this Every Child NC Coalition, I've been really proud to be a part of it and just see the level of Engagement has not dropped off at all in the face of these challenges. And that is the way it can go when you're fighting for educational rights, that, you know, you're going to hit some roadblocks. This is certainly one of them. But I think what I've seen is that a ton of people care about this. This is something that's really popular. People want to invest in our schools. They want to invest in our teachers. They want to invest in our early childhood systems and understand how important these things are. But that's just not translating into what happens at the legislature. And I think a lot of that is because of a lack of awareness of what the important role that the state plays in schools. You know, I think a lot of people, they might go look to their principal or their school board or maybe their county commissioners if they're highly engaged. But really, the state plays this huge role, and it's ultimately up to the state of whether or not your educational rights are being upheld, and they're on the hook for that. So, you know, I think more and more people are becoming aware of that. And whatever happens at the court, the legislature always has the opportunity to implement this plan, and there's nothing to stop that. And when you look at the items in the plan, again, they're things that are very popular amongst constituents across this state, where everybody sees we want to have nurses in our schools, we want to have counselors, we want to have highly qualified teachers and principals. We want to have up-to-date instructional materials, all these things that people want to see. Facility, it touches on facilities as well. I think we've seen a lot of issues with mold and HVAC problems this year. Obviously, buses not running on time, things like that. So it really addresses a lot of the things that matter to people in their lives, whether you're parents or community members, grandparents. You know, everybody's got some connection to these systems. They're the largest employers in a lot of our smaller counties. So I think this is something that's broadly popular. Just more people need to be aware that there is this plan out there for how we're going to do better in terms of educational opportunities across the state, and that we need to implement it, whether it's the court forcing it, but the court really shouldn't even necessarily have to force this. This should be something that should just get done because it's what our constituents want and need. It's what's best for our state going forward, making sure we still have a strong workforce, that we have supports for that workforce in terms of the early childhood systems and things like that. So these are all things folks want, so we're going to continue to advocate for them wherever the right place is, depending on what happens in the case.
Would you hazard to guess at all about what the court's going to do?
I really think the only thing I'm confident in is that these resources are not going to come as a result of this court order in any immediate fashion. It's going to be more delays. You can imagine how long it would take to figure out if there's been constitutional violations in 115 districts, although one quick way to do it would be to just look at some of the outcomes that, you know, some of the people who are fighting against this plan are the very people who will be the most likely to criticize the outcomes in our public school system, that we have, you know, kids who aren't reading on grade level, who aren't on track to be prepared for college and career across the state. So I think that the only thing I'm sure of is that that'll be a big delay, because it's not an easy thing to go into all of that and figure out why this is happening in every single district. And when the answer is really in front of us, and that's that we are one of the most under-resourced public school systems in the country.
Coming to the end of our time with Matt Ellenwood, who's the director of the Education and Law Project at the North Carolina Justice Center. So you mentioned the Every Child NC Coalition. Is that something that an average person could learn more about and maybe lend their name and support to?
Absolutely. You can go to everychildnc.org and you can see who some of the partners are there. We've got everything from big organizations to individual parents, and anybody who supports public education certainly would love to have you join. We provide updates on opportunities where you can engage around some of these issues as they arise, whether it's at the legislature. In some cases, it has been around this case. We're not going to stop fighting for this plan. We think it's important to have it out there, and no matter what happens in the case, there's still only one plan that's ever been developed that actually would uphold kids' constitutional rights across the state. So we have no choice but to continue to advocate for that particular plan.
Matt Ellenwood, Director of the Education and Law Project at the North Carolina Justice Center, ncjustice.org. You can also learn more at everychildnc.org. Matt, thanks for your fine work. Please keep it up. And I'm sure we'll check in again later this year.
Thanks, Rob. Good seeing you.
Coming up next, we'll hear from another expert about some of the biggest needs in our public schools. Stay with us.